We're going to switch over to talk about a proposal that's reached us for the Center for Regulation and Applied Economic Analysis. And so Chair Babcock and I will split the discussion on this as far as leading us through some of the things we've prepared and then open it for discussion to the Senate. Okay, so we've approved degree programs. Last year, I think we've looked at minors and certificates as well. We don't always see centers come through on as regular basis as we do those things. So we thought it would be useful to describe what a center is first, just to give us some context before we jump into the proposal itself. So centers are programs that are funded by external grants, and rather than being an academic unit or department that confers degrees, they represent an area of faculty expertise in terms of research interests and sponsored projects. So as far as the possible benefits of a center, why would faculty want to band together and apply for a name of a center? It can increase visibility for grant applications, particularly large dollar grants. It can actually enhance faculty retention and attract faculty to our university. I spent a lot of time in the Center for Biofilm Engineering, and that would attract a lot of faculty from all over the world just because of the name. It also provides an umbrella under which you can mentor graduate students and undergraduate students in the research enterprise, and invites collaboration from people outside your unit. So this is a little bit small, but just to highlight a few existing centers on campus, we actually have over 30 centers on the MSU campus here in Bozeman, and I think over 12 on the other campuses in the MSU system. And a couple of them are a little more recent. Michael pulled these to represent recent, kind of not so recent, and then an older center, more established. There's the Montana Institute on the Ecosystems. This was formed after the awarding of a very large EBSCOR grant in 2011. And this was a center that actually brought together faculty from University of Montana and Montana State University. There's also a more recent center, the Center for Western Lands and People. This is a center that involves faculty from a variety of disciplines. I'll probably leave a few out, but English, film and photography, archaeology, Native American studies, and history are all studying the nature and culture of the Western U.S. and Canada. And then one of the older centers on campus, I don't know if it's the oldest, is the Center for Biofilm Engineering. This grew out of an engineering research center grant that was awarded by the National Science Foundation in the early 90s, and it's still in existence today. And they've continued to fund themselves beyond the span of the grant through industrial partnerships and then other externally funded grants and contracts. Okay, so as far as the center review process goes, we have a little schematic that shows you kind of the progression of the idea. So the first red bullet is just to represent faculty coming together with a proposal. So these faculty may or may not have received a large dollar grant, but they feel that they have a critical mass to go for a center designation. So what they do is they submit an intent to plan proposal, and this intent to plan proposal is presented to the Office of Higher Education, and it is discussed in a conference call, and then is posted on the Board of Regents website. And then after that, it becomes an informational item on the Board of Regents agenda. And if anyone's carefully studied the agenda back in the September BOR meeting, the Center for Regulation and Applied Economic Analysis was on there. And it was informational only. It was not discussed. There was some public comments, but it was not up for discussion at the time. So then where it goes next is it goes to us, Faculty Senate, and it goes to Dean's Council. And these are both bodies that will either endorse or not endorse the proposal for the center designation based on the merits of the proposal itself. After that, it would go to the Board of Regents and become an agenda item, and then be voted on by the Board of Regents to designate or not designate the terminology of center. Okay, so just a little bit of background about this proposal. In 2016, faculty at MSU won a $5.76 million grant from the Koch Foundation. And about a year later, in May, they submitted an intensive plan to the office of the commissioner. And it was discussed over the summer, I think, in a conference call, and then posted as an informational item just under 2 months ago in Butte. Okay, so the next steps, and that's where all of you are going to be involved, is endorsement or possible endorsement by the MSU Faculty Senate. Dean's Council, if there are any deans sitting in the audience, this will be you and potentially others on campus. And then it could be a possible agenda item for discussion at the BOR meeting, I think in March, probably when it would hit. I just want to stress that only the Board of Regents has the ability to designate anything a center. It's not under the purview of even our president or provost to be able to make a center designation happen. It is a Board of Regents decision. We can either endorse or not endorse.
All right, so I just want to take one more moment before we jump into this particular proposal to remind what that process that we're going to take with this center proposal. So today, as we announced at our last meeting and talked about in the agenda, is that today is the first reading of the proposal. So all the senators in this room have had this proposal. We hope you've had time to read it carefully and talk to the people you represent. Abby and I also included a short FAQ because we don't look at center proposals a lot. So I wanted to provide some information about what centers are. Abby sort of went through a lot of that already. And so we're going to do that. We're going to have this first reading. And again, Abby and I are sharing that responsibility. And then after that, we'll open it up for questions and comments from senators. And we want to make sure that everybody gets a chance to hear, that we're not talking over each other. So please raise your hand or something, and Abby will call on you. You then can make your statement, your question, your comment. If it's a question, we will try and answer it. If we cannot answer it and we feel there's someone in the audience, the two faculty members that were the that wrote this proposal are here today. So if need be, we may call on them to answer specific questions. So we will do that, and then once we're done with that, we have time at the end of our meeting, as we always do, for public comment, and there's a lot of extra people here today, so we certainly will provide an opportunity for you to address the Senate. When that happens, I want to remind senators that it's not something that we respond to. We're just bringing this input into the discussion. So we're not being asked to answer questions of the public or engage them in any way other than allow them to speak. At our next faculty senate meeting, and this is our tradition, right? We don't act on something in the same meeting unless someone makes a motion to suspend the rules. But we anticipate the next meeting then we will be ready to move into what's called executive action. And that is where, and neither Abby or I can make a motion. We can't vote. So we'll be asking senators to, if they so choose, to make a motion considering this proposal. It will be seconded, hopefully, and then there'll be a more discussion, and then we'll call the question, and we will vote on that motion. So some of this, again, is summarized. This is right out of the proposal, so you hopefully read the proposal, so you're aware of this. I broke some of this down into just what's the mission, and you can read this. You can read this in the proposal. Engage undergraduate and graduate students with faculty and academic research that will further the understanding of regulation policy impact on social well-being. The proposal lists some goals of the center, and again, you can just read these: facilitating research, leveraging MSU's position, achieving lasting impact, enhancing the intellectual capital of on-campus State University. So these goals, these are what they hope the center will be able, what they plan to do. So in terms of activities, and this is important because, again, there's some money behind this. These faculty have a grant, and they plan to use that money in a variety of ways. There are some research fellowship programs, and in the FAQ I gave you, it talks about how decisions are made about how these positions are filled. They're going to be giving some research grants, and they've already done this on campus to people, even outside their department and unit. funding graduate students, funding undergraduate students, bringing visiting scholars to campus, hosting an annual conference on things that are of interest to the center, and then policy research-oriented workshops. So I want to finish by just addressing some questions. And these are questions that Abby and I have heard from others, and these are questions that have been asked of the faculty that are creating this, that wrote this proposal. And I think these are important things because I know in the media sometimes there's the way it's discussed or people outside the university don't really understand our process. But let me just share some important information here. And these responses are not mine. These are responses from the faculty that are writing the proposal. So are there policies in place to prevent this foundation from influencing hiring of personnel or faculty associated with the grant project? Absolutely. So there's nothing in the agreement with the foundation that anybody from that foundation has to agree, decide, or even is not allowed to serve on any committee for which someone would be hired. So all the searches follow the same standards that we all have to follow when we hire anybody on campus. Koch Foundation has no influence over these hires. Co-directors are not even serving on the searches. They're not part of the committee. Next question, are there practices in place to prevent the Koch Foundation from influencing the scholarship generated by faculty associated with this proposed center? And the response is research supported by the grant are expected to submit their research to high quality peer-reviewed academic journals and all research results and methods will be made publicly accessible. There's no requirement by the Koch Foundation to review research that is submitted for publication. And in fact, MSU prohibits that practice. Does MSU have an obligation to fund this center if the external funding is no longer available? And the answer is there is no such obligation. And it turns out that centers on campus, sometimes these centers will appear and then they will go away, or sometimes they will continue if they get more funding or if the university feels like it's important to continue. So grants are always time and dollar limited. MSU has seen every scenario played out over the decades, including the university providing base funding to a program, departments mortgaging future faculty lines, programs continue with new grant monies, or programs being discontinued. So what that means is that if we were to endorse the center and the Board of Regents were to give it center status, that does not mean that center is necessarily going to be here forever. Finally, does OCHE, Board of Regents, the administration, Faculty Senate, Student Senate, Staff Senate, I think I tried to get everybody here, have the authority to prevent faculty from engaging in an area of research or soliciting external funding for the relevant agency? And the answer is no. We don't have that authority. And that's part of this academic freedom thing that we all really feel is important. Of course, there are some regulations, right? And if you do submit proposals to external agencies, you know that you have to make sure if you use human subjects that they're protected. So we do have committees on campus that are looking at looking to make sure that what's being proposed is in compliance with federal, state, and local regulations. So in truth, there are certain things that the university can say that can't go out, mostly because the funding agency wouldn't fund it given the lack of review of protecting subjects from harm. So that's all Abby and I have, and now we're ready to open it up to Senate discussion, and we'll ask you to state your name and the unit that you are representing. And I forgot, this little machine over here is not a Geiger counter or anything. It's actually a recording, so this is a public meeting for which someone wanted to record the meeting, and they certainly are allowed to do that, but I wanted to make everybody aware of that. So we'll open it up to the floor of the Senate. Yes?
Eric Blasco, AgCon and Econ. So I'm a fellow at the center as a faculty center. I felt good to talk about a couple of things that were presented there. There are five fellows at MSU, Peter Bearhouse of the nursing, myself, Anton Beckerman, Randy Brucker, and Isaac Swenson. And a couple of things that were kind of brought up there that I want to speak to. As faculty fellows, we do serve on the committees for the grants. And so I've served on three of them so far. So you guys probably got a call for proposals. It goes university-wide. And the proposals come in. As a committee, we rate them based on things you would rate them on in any year review panel, significance, how clear the research plan is, and they all incorporate undergraduate research, which I like. We use an AH scale 1 through 9. We evaluate and rank them, and then we give those, we sort of hand those off. And so I guess the key thing there is, just like it said, is all the grants that are submitted are reviewed by faculty members. The other thing I can speak to is I'm also on a hiring committee for one of the two. There are two lines through the center. One's for financial engineering, which I guess you probably remember that program a couple years ago that was proposed. We have 70 students and 2 faculty members, so that's an area of need, at least in our department. I serve on that because I'm one of 2 faculty members who teach in that capacity. So those calls, so one is in financial engineering, the other is in health economics. Both of those are online, and I encourage you to look at them and see. As far as I've seen so far, they follow all the procedures that we would follow for any other search that we would have in my department. As a committee, there's 4 of us. We're all in the department. We screen through all the applicants. We bring them to the department. The department would then evaluate them, and they'd be, held accountable by the same role and scope documents as everyone else in the department. So they'd have to meet our academic standards. So to that second point, the hiring process, as far as I can see, is similar to what we would do in other capacities. The last thing I would say is, we do have Wendy Stock and Vince Smith here, the co-directors. They've both been in my department for a while. I think Vince is 29 years. Wendy has been there for 17 years, 10 of which she was department head. And they know a lot of the procedures much better than I do. So I'd say if there are questions about the procedures, they're good people to ask about them.
Thank you, Eric. Additional comments from Senator?
Senator Sturman.
Layla Sturman from the library. I'll direct this question, and maybe you can point it to the right person to answer it. This is clearly an issue that we're all thinking about. It was really great attendance today.
You should make up agenda items like this for every.
Thanks for all the information and the proposals and the process information. I think my major question is, given everything that's already happened, the money is already here, the fellows are working, grants are being given out, students are learning, all the functions that of the university, of a department, of a well-funded department, at this moment, what specifically would a center designation add to any of that? And I guess, with the caveat that the idea that the center designation helps you get more grant funding seems kind of flimsy to me, and I could say that about anything, right? So that doesn't seem like enough for us as a body to designate what seems like our approval on a center that seems currently to be doing everything that the proposal said it was going to do. Why do we need this extra layer of approval?
Well, thank you, Layla. And I think I would like to ask Dr. Stock, Wendy, if you would you mind answering that question?
No problem. I think that Chair Babcock spoke to this a little bit already, but one of the reasons to be designated as a center is to have a cohesive union of community and scholars that are working together in various research capacities, and that's one reason why we want to pursue a center. In addition to adding prestige when we do different activities, conferences, and so on.
Thank you. Thank you, Layla. More questions or comments from senators?
I have a second question. So in the proposal, it says that the funding for next year, say, there will be the center will submit a proposal to the foundation, and the foundation will approve it and approve the appropriate dollar amount up to $1.2 million for the next year. Are there criteria on what those dollar amounts are, you know, how they decide what's an appropriate and what's an inappropriate? You know, if the NIH, those are pretty public. Some centers, they're more public than others. Do you know the criteria that they're looking for specifically to fund next year's operations?
That's a question to the chair, and you want to know whether...
Does anybody?
I get to decide.
Thank you.
So I think what you're asking is when they resubmit for money for the next year, does the faculty know what the criteria are that the Koch Foundation will use to make that decision?
Right. And the reason I'm asking is because although it seems like faculty hiring and publication and the choosing of subgrantees and fellows is all done according to university procedure, I'm concerned that if there isn't clear criteria on what next year's funding comes from, I wonder how there couldn't be a conflict of interest in the actions of all those people within the Senate.
Okay, I think I maybe understand your question. I think I'm going to ask Wendy. Wendy, could you respond to the senator?
Yes, so like other grants that I've had, every year you submit an annual report. There are no criteria from the Koch Foundation that tell us we need to do one thing or another. We just need to do what we've said we were going to do, which is award grants and produce high-quality research.
Thank you. Great question. Dr. Smith, Department of Psychology.
Thank you. I also had an observation about potential conflict of interest that I wanted to get feedback from, and thinking about the mission, so Koch Industries is the second largest private company in the United States, and the Kochs have clearly gained from deregulated financial markets. So one look at the dissemination of scholarship from Koch-funded centers shows an abundance of research that favor market deregulation. So such research clearly benefits the bottom line of the Koch Foundation. Even if the Koch brothers have no effect on the decisions and the direction of the MSU Center, my concern is the perception of influence matters a great deal. To me, it looks as if the Koch brothers are buying research influence at Montana State University. And I want to know what safeguards are in place to confirm that any center, not just this one, but any center, be free from any real or perceived conflict of interest.
Jesse, that's a really great question. And I think I can answer part of it. I mean, the perception is the perception, right? But I think what we see in this proposal and what I shared with everybody is that on this campus, when there's a conflict of interest, it's managed. And so the question is, have these two faculty members, do they put safeguards in that would prevent that type of influence from the outside, to prevent the foundation, any foundation, from helping, you know, decide who they hire, what kind of research they do, et cetera, et cetera. And I think, as I shared here, they're not on any hiring committees. They're not being asked to approve any hires. They're not asking to look at any research before it gets published. So if we trust that process, then I would say they've attended to it. They have created a plan, essentially a plan to protect themselves from being influenced by their funding agency.
Can I just follow up on that? So in thinking about, I know that we have an entire office, research compliance, devoted to this as well. But I do think we should take heed from past experiences from other co-funded universities to assess the risk that our most vulnerable faculty, junior faculty, students, undergraduates, graduate students, that their academic freedom, our MSU employees and students' freedom, will be extinguished by what I'm suggesting could be potentially a coercive working environment. Just as an example, a 2011 investigation by the Koch-funded Center at Florida State University found that faculty were, quote, working in an atmosphere of intimidation. It was reported the dean made threats about future teaching assignments if Koch money was not available. The dissent with the Koch agreement was viewed as faculty disloyalty by the department chair. Many faculty, this report says, especially untenured ones, feared speaking out about the Koch Center in this atmosphere. So it's reasonable to me to assume that the constant fear of donor withdrawal can serve to intimidate MSU center staff. This maxim of control, which you can read in their proposal, is present in our MSU agreement, namely that the Koch Foundation's ability to withdraw their funding with as little as 15 days' notice. As the 2016 article in Inside Higher Ed report about Koch Center funding at the University of Kentucky, quote, is a gift that could be taken back at any time, really a gift. And I really legitimately worry about that faculty fellow or about that graduate student or about that undergraduate student who is hired by the center, given a grant by the center, who conducts research showing, for example, that an unregulated government benefits the already rich and privileged. Showing such negative effects of a free market would not be in line with the center's mission of societal well-being, and I worry about what happens to that professor. So even with the legal definition of a conflict of interest, I'm suggesting my concern is about the fear of intimidation for our faculty and students.
Thank you, Jessica. More comments or questions from senators? Kevin.
So it feels like the center's already existing on campus. They already have the money, they're giving the money out in research grants. And so my first concern, and this goes to a concern I have on a lot of things, why didn't we approve of this center before? Why is it coming up now? And it seems to be a pattern here in the issue where things are done at the last minute like this, which I think is wrong. Next thing I have, is the agreement already in place, publicly available for us as faculty as well as the public to look at? Next thing is the faculty center calls for new faculty lines. My comment is, are these endowed chairs or will the university be responsible for funding these faculty lines once the grants end? And while there's been talk that the Charles Koch Foundation doesn't play a role in this hiring process, I still worry that the donation of money and starting the center really already influences hires, and has the center already influenced recent hires? So I spent a couple hours looking last night on Charles Koch Foundation academic giving, and I tried to steer away from all of the sort of popular articles on this, and there are a lot, and I tried to steer more towards kind of scholarly articles. And so many reports state that the higher educational programs funded by the Charles Koch Foundation are fully integrated parts of a massive organizational network fighting to enact deregulatory government policies and elect conservative political candidates. And so reading that, not just on one, but on several different ideas, my questions become, if this isn't publicly available, how are current funding decisions made? What role is this center playing in the curriculum and hiring? The students receive scholarships? And really, this comes back to ensuring by making all of the information about this center publicly available, including the already signed agreement, this gets back to the integrity of Montana State. One of the things I found really useful was Wake Forest University Faculty Senate was faced with a similar decision regarding approval of the Charles Koch Foundation-funded center. And they formed an ad hoc committee to look at and review this center. And this report's easily found online, and I would encourage faculty senators to read this. It's actually a really interesting thing to read. One of the things they talked about is based on information presented from various sources, and I do have a report here with the references in it, the Charles Koch Foundation aims in higher education include to promote its free market ideology on campuses throughout the country by establishing research centers and institutes, to identify and fund market-friendly scholars, to influence curriculum, to create talent pipelines for future scholar think tanks and grassroots political efforts, and to influence local, state, and federal policies. And so it puts it simply, the Charles Koch Foundation's stated aims are leveraging higher education to convert students to their free market ideology. Now, well, there's probably sincere faith in the free market principles through the Charles Koch, and I'm sure that the faculty working on this believe in their work, research and work as well. I echo Jesse's concerns that there's a huge conflict of interest here that I'm very concerned about. And this huge conflict of interest makes me wonder about the integrity of having a center like this on the campus. The Wake Forest Faculty Senate offered the following motion. Due to the Charles Koch Foundation's unprecedented effort and documented strategy, and this is in quotes, due to Charles Koch Foundation's unprecedented effort and documented strategy to co-opt higher education for its ideological, political, and financial ends, the committee at Wake Forest prohibit all Koch network funding for any of its centers or institutes. Now, one of the issues raised by the Wake Forest ad hoc committee was a lack of transparency. They were never granted access to the Wake Forest Charles Koch Foundation agreement. And I feel like that's happened here at MSU already a couple years in. The center's coming up now for a vote, but the center already actually exists. And so it's this lack of transparency that's really bothering me about this center. And so for these reasons, I don't think I can support the center.
Kevin, thank you. And I was trying to write down, you started with some questions, and I certainly want to make sure that those questions get asked. One of them was, why didn't we look at this sooner? And as I showed, and as Abby talked about that little flowchart thing, you know, it has to start with an intent to plan. The Board of Regents requires that. So at that early stage, we really can't look at something that isn't a proposal. So it could have very well have been a list on a list of intent to plans on for the whole U.S. MUS system, and through that discussion, they may have decided not to move forward with it. So this is not something that has been, you know, the proposal just came out.
Yes, and I also want to stress that while a center may exist in terms of, you know, it doesn't exist on paper and it hasn't been approved, it may exist in spirit in terms of the research that faculty are already doing, and perhaps the grant being awarded is where you're saying that, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but perhaps that's where it feels as though this started. But we do not have any purview to approve the awarding of grants that are sought by faculty at Montana State University. It's completely within their freedom to pursue that. What we are being asked to do is approve their proposal to be designated as a center.
And I have responded that faculty pursuing grants is good. I applaud the faculty for receiving that grant. It's a lot of good things to submit. I appreciate that. I worry about the role of the center. I worry about researching the Koch Foundation and trying to understand what they're trying to do with these centers. And I worry about the role of the center at MSU. I worry about the integrity of MSU, and that affects all of us at MSU.
Very good. Thank you, Kevin. And that's absolutely what we're doing today, is having a discussion about that, and then senators will vote at some point. Yes?
I think I'd like to encourage the senators to look. There's a website for the center that has information on the grants that have been awarded so far, and as well as the call for those proposals. And I think what you find in those calls is that there's nothing that speaks to ideology. A lot of them, for the outcomes, what the center's looking for is high quality publication. So, you know, I think it would be better, given that the center, the bylaws for the center were written at MSU and not at other institutions. I think it's good to look at, or better to look at, what the center has done so far. Look to see what the fellows are researching, what grants have been funded. There's a small grants program. There's an undergraduate research program. There's also an annual workshop that happens every year. I would look at those and see if you see that, you know, that conflict of interest in those. And I think what you'll find is grants that have been funded across the university on a range of topics. Some could be, you know, showing regulation as a good thing, some as a bad thing, but I think the bottom line is that the outcomes that at least the center has told me is that I need to publish high quality journals.
To the chair, So, Eric, thank you for your comment. Kevin, thank you for your comment. More comments, or Abby?
I guess I just want to remind us, and I do the same, that it's not a center yet. It is a proposed center.
Thank you.
Sure. This is a point. The actual grant agreement is that bill to the public. Those were probably published in when it was applied, when it was approved in 2016. And it's still available online if you want to see it.
Thank you,
Jason. Yeah. I think Scott Freely Ecology.
Quick question, Scott Freely Ecology, maybe Eric, you could answer it because you sort of asked them already. You did mention the two PIs on the Finley on hiring. Is there anything laid out already in terms of what the composition of those hiring committees would be? In particular, are they going to be typical
part
of
the
faculty
or
so that's a question to me, and I'm going to ask Eric to respond to that question. It's all about control, folks.
And I can speak to the financial engineering search. So there's two positions, financial engineering and health economics. Financial engineering search, like I mentioned, I'm one of two faculty members that teach that class. So myself and Joe Atler are on the committee. And then other two faculty members, Carly Urban and Joe Jansen. So the search committee is all open.
Thank you, Eric, for that clarification. Any more questions or comments? Clem.
Michael. Clem Isurieta, computer science. With regards to the current research that is being done at the center, grants or papers, do they require the acknowledgement of the Koch Foundation in all those papers or publications, journals, or whatnot? And if they do, how many of those publications are contrary to Koch beliefs or ideologies? I'm just curious if there are any of those numbers.
So we have to keep reminding ourselves that you said from the center. The center does not exist
Correct.
At this time. So the question is, are they going to be required to put their funding source when they submit articles? I'm going to ask Wendy. I suspect it would depend on the journal, but Wendy is...
We don't ask the scholars to do one thing or another. We would defer to the journals that they're submitting things to. We've been in operation for just 1 year, and I'm not sure of the publication count that has come out. We don't know whether it was
Rob.
Yeah, I'm Mike. Rob Larson, Mechanical and Industrial. Kevin asked this earlier as part of this question. I don't think it was really addressed, whether continued funding for faculty lines would be supported by an endowment or if that would become an MSU obligation.
Good question.
That's a great question. I don't think we know the answer to that. I don't think there's been any obligation for the university to continue funding it. They may not. I don't think that's part of the agreement.
So,
is a provost?
He is. We could direct
it. I'd like to direct that to the provost because the provost might be able to respond to that.
So that was on funding for the faculty line?
Yes.
So provost, I think the question was, Rob, I think the question is, if the Koch funding were to disappear after these tenure track lines are hired, is the university under an obligation to continue funding those lines?
Right. So, good question. When I think about this, I like to separate the lines from the people. So the individuals who are hired for these positions will go through the same pre-tenure and tenure review process that all of us have gone through, and the same types of reviews. Nothing different than any of our positions. In terms of once the funding is expired, and if there's not funding in place to continue, their positions as individuals are not contingent upon that. Their positions are contingent upon the work that they do and then the award continue. In terms of the overall funding for the department, then the decision would have to be made. If new lines come free with other faculty leaving, a decision would have to be made whether those lines are continued to be funded, replaced, or whether there's this aspect of mortgage that occurs. So there's the only guarantee is that the faculty that are hired under these programs, their positions are as secure as any of our positions are dependent on the new faculty. So we'll go through the same year new process. And so in terms of the overall funding that goes to the department to support the new track line, the decision would have to be made at some point whether two additional line funding lines are added in, or whether one faculty members leave or retire if that adjustment is made in the base funding continued funding position. If the individuals go through the same process that all of us do and have the same guarantees to probationary periods or junior periods that all of us have.
Thank you, Provost Marqua. Rob, was that a response to the question you had?
I think it's probably as well as it could be answered.
Thank you. More questions or comments? Yes.
Teresa Sly, Gallatin College. I could just ask a question about going back to the very, very beginning. How exactly did the connection between the Koch Foundation and the center, how was that originally started? Was there lobbying on one side or the other, or was it just a submission?
I'm not sure.
I could make a guess, but I think it would be better to direct that to Wendy.
Yeah, so Dr. Smith and I put together a proposal to the Koch Foundation and submitted.
Do you have a follow-up question you want us to ask her?
I just want to know, was that solicited?
Oh, Wendy, was that solicited?
No.
Thank you. Great question.
You were not
senators
asking for information.
Nah.
Okay.
Sorry, Sarah. We're having public comment, though.
Quick whisper to Jesse.
Yeah, but Senator, pass her notes.
I just need a clarification.
Are there any more?
Senator Sterman.
You're third.
It's probably all allowed. My question, in the proposal, there was some talk about our geographic location and how that would benefit the center. I'm interested if you know what specifically or how our geography can help this center.
Mm-hmm. That's a great question.
Yes, I suspect it might have to do with the actual location of the Ag Econ department, but I will defer that to Dr. Stock.
So we envision the geography being important, partly to build on the expertise of our faculty. A lot of our faculty members have Montana Agricultural Experiment Station appointments, and as part of those, they do investigations of Montana-related agricultural issues, and we wanted to build on that for you right now.
Thank you,
Olivia.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yes.
Susan Dana, College of Business. I did ask my faculty in the College of Business what their reactions to this was. And I heard nobody who objected to it. I did hear from several, I can't say a majority, but I had heard from several that it's been very beneficial to their research program. And I just wanted to read a comment from one of our finance faculty members who, among other things, said that the creation of the proposed center has so far tended to support research projects for which I already had an interest. But these first small funding grants have also reinforced my interest in financial regulation and reinvigorated my research program. He then goes on to talk about how it's enabled him to collaborate with other researchers across the university and has included two of his MSU undergraduate students who also have received grants and so feels that this has been a great asset to business research. In particular, as he says, there are very few sources for external funding analogous to National Science Foundation or the National Institutes of Health for business research. Last year, for example, the National Bureau of Economic Research made grants of about $25.6 million. In comparison, the National Institutes of Health spent almost $32.3 billion. more than 1,000 times more. National Science Foundation spent almost $6 billion. And so just for those of you who are not in departments where there is essentially very little sponsored research, this is helping a lot for people who don't have access to those very large grants that are available to many of you in the sciences. So I just want to say that I think this has really helped research, and my faculty, of those I've heard from, are very supportive of it. I did have one question. Is it true that in the grant, the Koch Foundation can withdraw funding upon 15 days' notice?
I'm going to ask Wendy that question.
I would have to look back at the grant agreement. It hasn't been a concern of mine.
Senator Hagerty?
I'm Julia Hagerty. I'm in the Earth Science Department. I'm familiar with large grant processes that have annual divestments of funding, and they typically have a very significant assessment and evaluation program. So what we've heard so far is assessment and evaluation based on the standard quality of the number of peer-reviewed publications or the number of students engaged. But I'd like to hear, if possible, a formal description of the assessment and evaluation that's happening and how and if that might be adapted to address some of the conflict of interest issues that have been raised by other senators. And I apologize if I missed that in the proposal.
So you want someone to speak to the evaluation process for renewal of the grant?
Is there an external advisory board that's not comprised of the active faculty or the funders? Who's on that, and to what degree does that process, is it formalized, and
sure,
to what degree does it reflect to manage these conflicts?
I think we're going to turn this over to one of the co-directors of the grant.
So at this time, we have an internal advisory board that consists of the dean of the College of Business, the dean of the College of Agriculture, the head of the Department of Agriculture, Economics, and Economics, an elected faculty member from the department, and the head of political science. We report to that board twice a year on our activities. We have not yet built an external advisory board, although the infrastructure for that is in place. We wanted to pursue the naming of the center before we do that. And we are open to suggestions about how that should go.
Just a point of clarification as a follow-up. An advisory board is somewhat different than an assessment process.
Yes. I believe so. So if you're referring to whether or not the grant is renewed for funding for the follow-on years?
As an example, many of the large EBSCOR grants are officially contracts that go from year to year. They mandate you may, as faculty or researchers, seek the advice of an external and internal advisory board, but then you would also have a formal external advisor who's an expert in project assessment that can address specific goals of the program.
Gotcha. Dr. Stock, does one exist for Koch Foundation grants?
One does not exist for Koch Foundation.
So I would just finalize with a comment that one strategy for managing what appears to be a very difficult issue here might be to formalize that process and do it in a way that directly addresses some of these concerns.
Thank you for the suggestion.
Before we leave, the senator, if anybody had the opportunity to go to the 10x10 at the Ellen, I know you did an amazing presentation. So thank you for that. That was great. And it's because you're a senator, I'm sure, that you were able to.
Everything I know, I
learned here. Mike Berry, civil engineering. So what happens if faculty senate is not in diversity? Right? Does it then? I'm not saying this is going to happen. I'm just saying if it happens, is the funding contingent upon the center designation, or is it just they just want the designation to call themselves a center? Or
I think I can actually answer this one. Okay. So if faculty senate does not endorse this proposal, it is very unlikely that it will be presented to the Board of Regents. It is very unlikely. The president could do it, but I think it is very, very, very unlikely that she would move this forward to the Board of Regents without faculty senate endorsement. If it is not, if it doesn't become a center, the money that we have now or the money that the investigators have now from the Koch will not be going back.
And my understanding is they were to pursue is that correct? A designation of center, if possible, and so that is what they're doing right now. But if the grant funding is not contingent,
they would keep acting as a non-center center.
Yeah, they would keep acting as a group of faculty who have a shared interest and fund people off the grant as they wrote in their project. Senator Smith.
So I do have the, thanks to the Bozeman Chronicle, a copy of the agreement up, and just, there was a question about the 15 and 30 days, and I just wanted to clarify, point 7, subsection A, very clearly says that the donors can remove funding within 30 days, and then the university, in the event of that termination, has 15 days to return all unexpended contributed amounts to the donor.
Oh, great. Thank you.
That's so, Susan Dana, College of Business. Turns out Eric next to me also had the agreement. The provision immediately before what Jesse just mentioned says the donor has the right in its sole and absolute discretion to terminate this agreement or discontinue or withhold any contribute amount if, one, the university has not fully complied with any provisions set forth in this agreement. Two, the center programs are not advancing the center's mission as stated in this agreement, and I would say it says the center's mission. Or three, such action is necessary to comply with any law applicable to the university or the building. So there's three circumstances, and only those three, under which, yeah, then there's that 30-day notice. And if I could add to just that, I spoke with Craig Ace, our dean of the College of Business, who participated early on in the discussions, and he mentioned to me yesterday that I was welcome to mention this today, that in those early discussions, the representative from the Koch Foundation had said they had made some mistakes previously, and that was not wise, and that now when they have agreements with universities, they do have provisions in their agreement to do everything they can so that it's not perceived that the Koch Foundation can control the content of the research. So that's simply what Craig told me happened in that meeting. I have no personal knowledge of that.
Thank you, Susan. I want to save some time for public comment. A lot of people showed up today that didn't want to speak. So are there any senators that feel there's anything else they would like to add to this conversation? Who had their hand up first?
Eric Austin, Political Science. I have partly a question and partly a comment. And the comment piece of this relates a little bit to the issue of influence and a little bit to the issue of transparency. In some conversation and discussion about whether or how it might be possible for the Koch Foundation to influence the kind of research. And much of that discussion has kind of orbited around what happens with research once it's done. Does it get published? Where does it get published? And so forth. The comment that I'd like to make is that I'd like to suggest that that's not the only place that influence happens, right? The influence happens in what gets funded. My esteemed colleague from economics made some comments in his introductory remarks that are helpful in this way to understand how these grants are reviewed. I've looked at, it looks like the current website describes it as an initiative rather than a center at the moment, for whatever that's worth. But the website describes sort of how it's reviewed as opposed to what it's, sort of what the content of that review is. So the question really is, and this is a, sort of the transparency piece, is can you tell us a little bit more, or will it become available to us to understand sort of more of the content components of the review for that, for those grant proposals?
So that's a question that you'd like
for
us
you
direct
too.
To Eric.
Yeah. Sorry, I'll
that's
just,
okay. Okay. Just look at me.
Yeah.
Eric.
Yeah, I mean, so there's nothing with regard to the content. I mean, I think it's, you know, I've been on a few panels with, you know, with the USDA, the proposals where, you know, you look at sort of the significance and how, you know, what their approach looks like and is it reasonable. And those are the same metrics that we're using when we're evaluating these proposals. So I think in a lot of ways that leaves the content to be somewhat open.
Thank you, Eric. Do you have your
hand up? I did. So as somebody who doesn't necessarily have experience with high-dollar grants, I'm wondering if the provisions in the proposal that we talked about are typical of other large dollar grants, say from the NIH or NSF?
Well, it's a foundation, so it might be a little bit, but I don't know enough about foundation funding to know if this is a common practice for foundations. I imagine even NIH, if you're not meeting expectations in a given year, they can stop funding too. So.
And there are some grant proposals, DARPA, for proposing agencies, funding agencies, DARPA for one, where you set metrics that are go, no go, and if you don't achieve a certain metric by a certain point, the money's done. And you don't move on to phase two, phase three, wherever there's a go, no go. I don't know if that's the case in this grant, but there are some government funding agencies that do have those in place.
For 15
days? It's done. You get to the end of quarter four, and if you haven't said you will achieve what you're going to achieve, it's gone. So it's pretty quick. I don't know, Wendy or...
Wendy, would you like to follow? Coulter, did that answer your question, or
no?
Okay.
We tried really hard,
yeah.
So we can ask Wendy.
We'll ask Wendy.
Wendy, did you hear the question?
I think so. I can only speak to my other experience with grants with foundations. So the Spencer Foundation and the Ford Foundation. This grant is operating much the same way. We provide an annual report, but we haven't had the experience of. We must have X number of publications and so forth to come back. And we do hold an annual conference, and that would be one metric, I suppose, that would be used.
Thank you. So, are there any additional information senators would like to share with each other? Any questions before we open it up to public comment? Yes.
So, at the next meeting, are we going to, is it likely that we're going to vote, or are we going to continue more discussion, or is there any way that us can be suggested about the other universities have a different committee or something, so that we can continue discussing what's going to be the process?
I think it's up to us. I mean, I think once everybody had an opportunity to have a discussion, then a motion could happen. But neither Abby or I can make a motion, and if there's a motion, there'll be a second, and then there'll be discussion, and then we can call for a vote. You can't make a motion to not approve something. It has to be an affirmative thing. So if you don't want something to happen, just don't make a motion, I guess. All right, anything else? Yes.
I just had one. So I do have experience with grants, NIH, NSF, DARPA. This one is very similar to what you do every year. You get a 5-year grant, and every year, write, and they can yank it after you. Something goes horrible, not something. You can just write it and do stuff. You don't know. DARPA is the. What I view this as, you know, I think really it's really cool that people are active and they got this kind of money to came to do super long research. I feel this is a big positive thing. I don't see any influence being directly put onto research during those 5 years as this grant goes on. Can you explain how there's no influence of hiring on, you know, setting grants? Is that kind of thing as well? What I view, you know, the place where the kind of influence can come in is that year four happens. Now you either get renewed, you get another grant, or in that case, your two trend lines continue, two of them, both of them, there's no contraction necessary. That's a very positive thing for the department to happen. Or, if the grant is not renewed, now you're kind of looking for negotiation with the provost, you want to see whether somebody wants to help you feel that. It's kind of an unpleasant thing to do. It's at that point. But, you know, I think we should trust our colleagues to have their scientific integrity. Do the best research they can do. I cannot see how we can second guess them and say, well, because maybe in 3 or 4 years they may be trying to do some research which is going towards the Koch Foundation. I don't know how to judge them. I don't want to them to say, okay, you should be doing research which shows this because Koch Foundation says that if you don't do this research. Right? I'm not going to be arbiter of what will happen. So the question I think I have is, if we trust our colleagues in the department that they'll do the best research, I don't see how we can go and try to become micromanagement.
Thank you. All right, unless there's any objection, I would like to open it up to public comment. So again, we have several people that, sorry, oh, who else, Layla, number four?
I just wanted to respond and say that I don't think that we're trying to say who's gonna study what, where they get the money to study it, if they publish on that study or not. We're looking at a center, and I think those are two very different things. And I think it's important to, you know, to not worry that we're looking at asking our colleagues to research or study something because we feel some moral imperative, some other direction. And that's definitely, I think, not a role in reviewing the center. It's whether we're giving a center designation, which can feel all those things, but it's something much more bureaucratic and outside of that. And I think that's important to remember when we're thinking about academic freedom, because it would be terrible if we were doing this in a way that inhibited anyone's freedom to study what they feel is important and meaningful to the well-being of our nation and the state and people.
Thank you, Layla.
Just a real quick, I want to second that comment. The research is the research. That's the faculty's imperative, and I trust that they're doing great research. This is a discussion about a center, and this is what we're talking about. And I want to make sure we keep those separate. I appreciate the comment.
Okay. Thank you, Kevin. Any pressing things? All right, so we're going to open up to public comment, and I just want to remind the public, you're welcome to come up if you'd like to speak up here, or you can speak from where you are. If you just make sure you tell us your name and affiliation, if you want. So we'll start here.
My name is Jim Getz. I'm an attorney, but I've been affiliated with this university for quite some time. I got my degree in history in 1965. I came back after law school and taught here. I actually was present at the creation of the political science department around 1972. And I've been wrestling with the regents and with President Rosado on this for over a year. So I have a couple of comments. I'm really sensitive about the academic freedom issue here. But one of the comments made by Senator Dana was, Koch said they made some mistakes, they have repaired them. Well, what would you do if you were trying to convince a university to take your money but look like it's consistent with academic freedom and that they're not trying to co-opt? And I urge you, if you haven't, to look at the relevant pages on dark money, because the Koch Foundation's agenda is to seduce and co-opt universities and students and scholars. And so this isn't your typical academic freedom issue. Now, several specific points. Question, can the Koch Foundation exert influence on this? The answer in part is if you look carefully at the contract, and that's one area I have some particular expertise, the contract says that in their sole discretion, that is the foundation, they could terminate the funding, or each year they could refuse to continue the funding. Well, what is the sole and absolute discretion? Is there any constraint on that? And Senator Dana read that, but one of them is, if it's not, the center programs are not advancing the center's mission as stated in the agreement. What is the center's mission? If you look at paragraph 2A, the center's mission is to engage undergraduate and graduate students with faculty and academic research that will further the understanding of economic regulation and policy's impact on society's well-being. Now you tell me, what is society's well-being? And is anybody in this room consonant with Charles Koch's view of society's well-being? What if that's an undefined term? And if you look at dark money, there's a discussion, very interesting, on how they sell this kind of program. And they sell it with the term well-being because people don't like economic libertarianism. It just hasn't sold. So they talk about societal well-being. Well, in other words, from a legal standpoint, what does this contract mean? It means they can terminate on 30 days notice or whatever, or not renew. If the mission is not being fulfilled, the mission of society will be. So tell me, I mean, come on, there is influence here, there is the ability to influence. This is not an attack on the integrity of the faculty or the quality of the research, but this is basic contract. Now the second point is on the question of this contract calls for, in terms of after the grant terminates, funding to positions. The university shall ensure, this is paragraph 3B, shall ensure the faculty positions affiliated with the center, including the tenure track professorships, continue after the term according to the university's normal policies. So they're leveraging, as I would if I were Koch, to try to use MSU or taxpayer money or whatever to continue this center and the funding. Now, I've been assured by President Prezzato that we still have to go through normal university procedures. And so there's no guarantee, but there's certainly an implied commitment to commit this university to continue funding after the Koch grant. Now, one final point, and that is on the hiring itself, I think that, well, the proposal by the professors talks about who shall be on the committee to review and approve the hires. And they made sure in the proposal that the two directors of the center, Professor Stock and the other professor.
Well, that's Smith.
Sorry. Public comment. We'll let this gentleman finish.
Are on the committee. And so they, in turn, in the proposal itself, it says that for academic units at the university, individuals who will hold positions with or be affiliated with the center in the activities carried out through the center programs must be approved by the center's co-directors. Now, I don't know this, but I think that is different from your normal university hiring practices. And so I'm just saying that I think after Koch has had some experience, they're trying to subtly manipulate so they look like this is a neutral university funded situation. It really is not. And so I brought copies of my letter of September 14th last year to the regents. I have no idea how many people will be here. I have 10 copies I'm happy to share if you have a website. I'll circulate them. But it goes through this contract. I respectfully submit that this is a tainted grant. It will compromise the integrity of the university. And I know you need money. I know the state doesn't finance absolutely. And I commend getting money to research. But I respectfully submit this is not the right one because of what Koch's are trying to do. Thank you.
Great. Thank you for your comment.
Sarah?
I just have a point of clarification because I was on sabbatical last year, so I'm just trying to figure out this. And then I hear they're doing something with summer teaching. So Abby talked about winning a grant, and then I've heard the word gift used, and then the contract all refers to a donor. So I just... I'm curious, what was the money come through the foundation? Did it come through OSP? Was it a competitive grant, or was it a gift from the program? And I'm not sure if that makes any difference, but I'm curious if how we tend to fund centers, and I just don't understand that process.
And
my other question is just, are there criteria for center approval anywhere? Because I actually don't know anything about. We have a long list of centers you included in here.
Mm-hmm.
You said if centers don't do well, they go away. They never go away. But like, are there criteria for approving them? I feel like the obvious answer would be of course, but I can't find a paper.
So we don't actually approve. We might endorse, and the BOR is who ultimately approves. And we, our history is perhaps a little murky on terms of guidelines.
Abby, you just speak up a little bit.
Oh yeah, sorry. So the Board of Regents is ultimately who approves. We only endorse the application for the center from the university.
Do they have criteria?
You know, sir, this, we're kind of in a public comment.
Oh,
so
sorry.
I apologize. I don't want to start a dialogue between the Senate.
That's
and
true.
And so
no,
if you send Abby or I an email, if you send us an email
as
a faculty member or through your rep, but you could just email us directly. We would be happy to try and answer that. So we're still doing public comment. And who is next?
Greg?
Yes.
Hi, I'm Greg Gilf, and interim department head of Aggie Con Econ. A couple years ago, I presented with Miles Watts a proposal for the financial engineering major program. Since that time, we've grown and over 70 majors, and that's put a lot of pressure on our staff, as Eric has alluded to. The two faculty positions for which the center is funding, the search committees were composed by me, and they do not include either of the directors of the center. They are representatives and a composition of my faculty. The hiring head is, in essence, me. I haven't received any communications from the Koch Foundation ever, and they have no influence with regards to my department or any of the administration that goes on within the DAE.
Thank you for your public comment.
Garrett?
Garrett?
Hey guys, I'm Garrett Agnew. I'm a senior in bioengineering. I'm also at the Voice Center and the co-chair of the Science Policy Advocacy Network and organization here at MSU. I have a petition we're bringing to them at Montana University System Board of Regents that reflects many of the points that Jim Getz wrote. If you guys wouldn't mind passing them around, if you want one, that would be great. I'll try to avoid the points that Attorney Getz already touched on, but I wanted to bring up a couple points. So, first of all, based on our grounds for urging you all to reject this center proposal, first, based on the excerpt from the internal Charles Koch Foundation panel entitled Leverage Science in the Universities, the donors' stated aims of leveraging higher education include to promote its free market ideology on campuses throughout the country by establishing research centers and institutes, to identify and fund market-friendly scholars, to influence the curriculum, to propagandize and cultivate students loyal to the cause of the freedom movement, to create a talent pipeline for future scholars, think tanks, and grassroots political efforts, and to influence local, state, and federal political legislation and social transformation. Two, the ultimate aim of this research is to serve the interests of the donor, not academic inquiry. The donor stands to make, as it was pointed out earlier, substantial financial returns as a result of these efforts due to lower taxes and reduced government regulations. This agenda benefits the private interests of the donor more than it does the public, even though the donor plans to be funding genuine research. There is no inquiry in this proposal, but a pursuit, at least on the donor's part, of preordained research conclusions. Like Jim Getz stated, the mission is very nebulous. The donor maintains undue authority over the workings of the center, and the agreement bypasses normal academic procedures, even if those procedures if normal academic procedures are to be put in place, one would think that if the Board of Regents or the grantees were concerned about the language of the grant, they would have asked for a rewritten grant agreement that didn't place them in an awkward position. So it is the view of the students that I represent that Montana State University and the Montana University system should sever all connections to the Charles Koch Foundation and its well-documented attempts to co-opt higher education for ideological, political, and financial ends. Any institutional association with the donor sullies the reputation of this university, regardless of any protections put in place for what the center's stated mission may be. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you. Nice t-shirt. Any additional public comment?
Yes.
Please.
My name is Drew Deskin. I'm going to be speaking on behalf of...
Could you spell your last name, please?
D-E-S-K-I-N. I'm going to be speaking on behalf of Haley Cox. She wrote in here a letter. So it said, it reads, my name is Haley Cox, and I'm in my fourth year of studying cell biology and neuroscience and liberal studies at Montana State. I would consider myself an involved student, but perhaps the most important identity I own is that of a first-generation college student. Montana State has afforded me opportunities that my parents didn't have, and I'm providing this comment in the hopes that the next generation will also have the opportunity to attend a public land-grant institution for the first time in their family. I have previously commented on private fund acceptance before the Board of Regents and Montana Legislature. As our Faculty Senate, you must reject the trend towards privatization of our university, which means rejecting the establishment of the Center for Regulation and Applied Economic Analysis. We can weather a budget storm and come out on the other side stronger with our values and mission intact, but allowing private interests to undermine the land-grant mission of Montana State will have far-reaching and detrimental consequences. Further, this university should provide a healthy image for our democracy. Accepting these grant funds, and thus accepting the terms associated without public input, is a moral decision, not a political or financial one. The agreement will bypass normal academic procedures and further undermine the democratic and academic processes at MSU. Furthermore, seeking private funding to fill budget shortfalls, which have knowingly occurred at the hands of the legislatures, serves to transfer culpability from their insufficient budget and into the private sector. The establishment of this center puts the university in a position where they must keep funding the center, either by maintaining private affiliations or through an already strained state budget. Establishing this center will serve to affirm and substantiate claims which are tainted with private interests rather than an interest in educating the people of Montana, be it with the acquisition of a large grant or the ability to undermine research autonomy. Please reject the establishment of this center. Sincerely, Haley Cox.
Great, thank you. Please thank her for that, too.
Chair, just a point of order. Could you ask the audience just to take their comments out in the hall? I can't hear the students.
Very, thank you. Yes, please. Please be respectful of people that are speaking at the meeting. So
they can't hear you because they're talking.
It's really difficult for us to listen to the public comments. We're just taking in the hall here.
All right. Can I just ask quickly how many more people want to make public comment? I see one.
Connor.
Two, three,
mine
four.
Is unrelated to the center, if you want to agree.
I am curious, though. So maybe we, if you'd be okay with this, maybe just center ones, given the time, would that be okay? Or would you like to?
I mean, the intersectionality of the.
You know, I shouldn't decide. You're welcome to make a public comment. Senator, we're about at the end of our time, so if you would indulge us for another maybe 5 minutes or so, so we can...
My comment is 60 seconds tops.
Okay. Connor.
Thank you. Good afternoon, faculty. My name is Connor Hoffman. I'm a fourth-year student of the Honors Record Interdisciplinary Studies Program, as well as the Chemical and Biological Engineering Program. I'm here today to advocate that the Faculty Senate take a stand alongside the students of MSU and call for our state legislators to raise state revenues. Without action from our legislators, the State General Fund, which services higher education, alongside the Departments of Health and Human Services and the Department of Corrections, will face a 10% cut to its budget. Cuts to higher education will likely result in cuts to programs and significant hikes in undergraduate tuition, nullifying a year of hard-fought work by students to minimize reductions to the university system and to preserve the low cost of higher education in Montana. In the past 2 months, we have witnessed banners drop at football games, the passage of a call to action from our student region through the Office of the President, and the resolutions arising from the student representation of both the University of Montana and Montana State University. These have all rejected the notion that student tuition hikes and cuts to student programs are the right tools for patching holes in the state budget. In the face of this challenge, both our students and our administration have taken a stand for the interests of the university system. The group which has yet to raise their voice in opposition to our current trajectory are our faculty. Please help us provide institutional unity in addressing this critical issue by raising your voices. While it is my understanding that faculty have been assured that their positions are safe. I urge you to consider the students you teach and mentor, the communities which you serve, and the most vulnerable people of this state who are not privileged to share our platforms for speech and who will also be harmed by the general fund. I am not asking you to solve this budget crisis, to determine what measures will be used to raise revenue. Only that you stand beside us and ask our state legislators to go back to work, to raise revenue, not tuition, and to find courage, not cuts.
Great, thank you. Who is next?
Sarah?
Sarah?
Well, I'm publicly commenting on my understanding that this is not a question for me. So now I should make a comment, so you're not going to answer my question. So I just want to come back to the question that Julia and someone else raised before and say that I think that it is really important, as they point out, to separate the center issue and the research issue. Like, I think part of the problem here is we do implicitly trust and respect our colleagues, but what I'm hearing is a lot of distrust for the Koch Foundation, and that those are two separate entities, but they're coming together in this moment. And so part of, you know, like your Koch Foundation, the MSU relationship document you sent around, just pretty much says, like, trust us. The Koch Foundation has no influence. Trust us. There's no influence on the committee. There's no influence over the visiting scholars' appointments. And, you know, I understand asking each other to trust each other, but who we don't trust is the Koch Foundation, because there's a lot of substantial documentation that all of this stuff happened at other universities. Not here, but at other universities. I mean, many documented cases. So I guess I want to go back to Julia's point that how would we know if this was the case besides trust, and how would we know would be a much bigger, much more interdisciplinary advisory committee that doesn't have one person from political science who rotates by the year, right? Which is how it's been so far. Probably wouldn't be that way long term, but that's what I've seen so far. So I guess that would be my comment, that if, in the interest of transparency, it seems like having a much broader set of eyes would just resolve that problem, and possibly that should go hand in hand with delaying the question about making it a center for a year or two until there's some renewals of funding to show that there's no undue influence like at the other universities that have extensively documented this.
Thank you. So we have some public.
I'll be very brief. I would encourage you.
Excuse me, could you share your name?
Oh, yes. My name is Joy LeClaire. I am the host producer of a public affairs radio program called Fourth Right Radio. I'm a resident of Bozeman. And I urge you to consider reading the William Chafe Professor of History and Public Policy at Duke University, Nancy McLean's book, Democracy in Chains, The Deep History of the Radical Right's Stealth Plan for America. And I urge you to consider that this issue is far bigger than what happens at Montana State University at Bozeman. If you read this book, which is meticulously referenced, in their own words, it is a stealth plan to completely undermine democracy. It's a plan by the oligarchy to undermine democracy. And this is a very small part of an extremely well-organized, decades-long plan to do this. And they're very close to doing it now, including a constitutional convention. They're only a few states away from that. And anything goes if that happens. That's all I will say now. And thank you for the time.
Thank you for your public comment.
Thank you.
I'm not doing a good job. Keep track of who's.
I think there was one over here.
Steve?
Yes, hi. Thank you for the opportunity to comment. My name is Steve Kirchhoff. I'm an adjunct instructor in English and, for the moment, on the side. And I'm here to agree with all of the objectors who have spoken before me. I think each one is taking a slightly different approach, but I think all of those comments taken together cumulatively make a pretty strong case. I also would like to chime in with those who have said this is not an attack on your colleagues. It's not an attack on anyone's integrity as a human being. You want to talk about the center, and I think talking about the center is very important. It seems to be what your focus is, but I also believe you can't talk about the center unless you talk about the document that establishes the center. So if you have not read the grant agreement, the contract, if you want to call it, then I really encourage you to find the grant agreement, and I would encourage you to read it in a very careful but sort of plain and direct fashion. I think what you find is essentially coercive language. Maybe coercive is not the right word. I'm not an attorney. But the language essentially is calling for a product to be delivered. and sort of presents a quid pro quo arrangement whereby the deliverables are delivered and they are accepted, then they go merrily forward. If they're not delivered, the donor can withdraw funding, terminate the agreement at will or at whim. And to me, that creates a coercive environment for research, and it's not the people I'm concerned about, it's the document, and it's the sort of gilded cage that the document creates with language. And I think a good reading of that document, I think most people, reasonable people, reading that document would find that the Kochs have engineered a wonderfully designed trap. And I think that it's worked in other places. I also think that we'd be naive to strip this from what the Koch Foundation is doing. They have a well-known track record, sort of a nefarious track record. I wonder if our institution wants to share its brand, share its reputation, share what it's doing with the Koch Foundation. If you do, I hope that you will make them name the center the Koch Foundation Center rather than some other sort of group of words. Truth in advertising, tell people what they're getting so that people know. Most people in the state of Montana have no idea that they're going to be on the hook for funding in perpetuity a curricular component from this grant, which is the two tenure track faculty. That is a curriculum that goes with it. So taxpayers, although I know they're not paying their fair share, they're paying less than 50 cents a dollar, they're still paying. And they're going to be defraying the cost of what is created through this grant in the future. This grant's going to run out. It's not going to keep going. But the school will, I hope. And if the center does, it's going to be funded by someone. And it's not going to be the Koch Foundation. It's going to be the taxpayers of the state of Montana. And what do they know about what you're talking about today or what the Regents have one time talked about in September? No one talks about this issue. It does not have great airplay. No one knows what's going on. I don't think that's a fair way to do curricular implementation. That's no way to do public policy. We need to be way more open, way more transparent, and people need to know the stakes that are contained in this grant language. So I don't think you can talk about the center without bringing up the grant document. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
I think there was a young lady with her hand up.
Hello, my name is Emma Bodie, and I'm a graduate student in the Land Resources Environmental Science Department. And I'd just like to make a quick comment. Earlier commenters asked how we might know where the center is going, where the proposed center will be going, and what direction they're taking. And I think a good way to look at that is to examine what kind of publications they're proposing to do this with. So I'd like to read a couple titles for proposals from the center, from the non-center. First, to quantify the influence of government institutions on general well-being as reflected in a country's gross domestic product. So I question the use of well-being here, as in the grant agreement. And the next one is to examine the regulatory environment of natural gas and fertilizer industries. And a third one is to test whether the Dodd-Frank Act has had a differential impact on the performance of banks across asset size. So this seems to be an indicator of the center's direction. Lastly, a private university has greater discretion in its funding resources than a public university, which has responsibility to the public. If Wake Forest University, a private university, can stand up to the Koch Foundation, or Koch Foundation, why can't we? Thank you.
Thank you for your public comment. I think we have time for one more, if there's anybody else who would like to make public comment. Yes.
Okay. My name is Nancy Oskey, citizen of Bozeman, and I've been reading this book, Dark Money, and I am concerned, cost-wise, not just the fact that the Senate not support this proposal. It seems to me that by having strings attached to the agreement that it will revoke the funding or curtail the funding, even if the co-directors are not involved in actual hiring, obviously it seems simple that their interest would be that the research undertaken with the grant money satisfies the Koch brothers' interests, and which I think are really heinous, and they are single-handedly responsible for preventing us from really taking a whack at climate change, and they're against living wages, they're against Medicare, Social Security, and I really think the reputation of MSU would be discolored by this association.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I think we'll adjourn our meeting. Thank you, everybody, for staying a little bit late.